Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000. We have a full house today. I have my co-host, Ray.
Hello.
And my co-host, Jim.
Hey.
Hey, guys. Good to have you all here. We had a busy week with Warhammer Fest online. We have some additional news. We're actually recording on a Monday night for the first time in a long time. So we have some more news that came out this particular Monday morning. Plus, we had two GTs with a little bit of a different spread of winning factions. So lots to unpack. So let's start with Warhammer Fest online. Interesting enough, what's the day one was Age of Sigmar. The original vampire counts that they came out with were quite the show stealers. What do you think of these guys, those new ones that came out?
Go ahead, Jim.
I didn't like them. Well, that's a lie. I like some of them. I like a lot of them. The only model I didn't particularly like was the Centaur Vamp. I don't mind the parts individually, but I just think the way that they're connected feels a little bit off. Like, I think I like the concept. I think it just was executed poorly. The top half is great, is very well sculpted. The bottom half is very well sculpted. It's just the way that the hip connects. It just feels very, it feels like a bad, you know, when like kids are trying to build things and they like cut a half off one thing and then cut a half of another and then just mash them together. That's what it feels like.
To me, it looked like, you know, when you get a puppet show and you can see the puppeteer's hand going up the back of the puppet.
Yeah.
It felt like there's a dragon going up the back of it, and it's a vampire puppet. It was. I don't get it at all. I mean, like I said, each part looks really well sculpted, but the sum of the parts was the whole was less than the sum of the parts. It was really bad. I don't know. I didn't like it at all.
Yeah. But everything else looks great. I love the wolf lady and the
That's pretty
vampires,
cool.
Other vampires. I love the skeletons and the blood knights. For the most part, I think it's a great range. I almost pulled the trigger on some zombies today, like to pre-order, but I held off because I realized I have so much other stuff to do right now, and it's just an impulse buy. I was planning to maybe paint 20 up for poxwalkers so I could mix them with my poxwalkers. But I actually don't really even need them because I'm not playing that many Poxwalkers right now. So
day two brought us to some 40K stuff, which was, I think we all kind of had the same sentiment from our last show that don't show us too much because of, you know, you haven't been able to get stuff to the table. And can't say there were a whole lot of surprises with this particular showing.
I liked it.
With the 40K stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, spoiler alert, I think the 40K reveals were super lame overall. I won't spoil what's on Thursday until we get there, but given that they spread it over 2 days, day one we basically saw one new model, maybe two. So most of the sister stuff was recycled. Obviously, we did get the announcement of the new codex, the two new books. But other than that, we only really saw the new Abbess, which is like the leader. And then almost everything else was old, except maybe a few new poses of the Shield Maiden ladies. Everything else was basically recycled. So I just felt, and then obviously for Thursday's reveals as well, I thought there wasn't enough. I don't know why they spread it out. Like they could have done everything in 5 days and just put 40K in one day. Personally, I thought. Because I think each of the shows is only like really half an hour long, so they could have just done a 45-minute reveal. And,
yeah. I mean, the good news was we now know. Well, I don't know if it's good news. I'll just report the news. How's that? We know Bellicor will be appearing in a second book of Charadon, so the Book of Fire, sequel to the Book of Rust. So the good news is we're getting his rule sooner than later. Bad news, I guess, would be we're not actually getting a Chaos Demon Codex anytime soon.
Yeah. I've heard some rumors of the contents of the Army of Renown, and I can tell you right now it's not going to be good.
Oh.
That's all I can say.
Okay.
Without spoiling. But it's not going to be good, as predicted. I heard Bellicor rules are pretty good, and his spells are pretty good, but that's about it. Other than that, I mean, I don't have a lot of faith, but it sounds like there might even be more AdMech and Sisters rules in there, so... I'm displeased with this trend of like the day one books supplements for codexes that are just coming out. And especially since all the Chaos Space Marines in the new book will be one wound Chaos Space Marines, it just feels weird to have that out but not have like the actual Chaos Space Marine book out to use the new rules with.
It is rather strange. Okay. So yeah, the whole they're still hanging on the one wound Chaos Space Marine thing is bizarre to me. But anyway, whatever. But the High Lord of Terra was interesting. At first glance, I thought it was a war machine model. I was like, but it was kind of neat to see it on the battle. But it's interesting how we have basically a Sisters of Battle Primarch now in our midst. So another 8 wound high behind the screen character. So I'm kind of like, oh, okay.
Yeah, and we haven't, obviously, they did a little Battle Sister Bulletin this morning and revealed her rules. So she's looking pretty beefy as far as, like, her stats. I think, you know, she's kind of on par with Gilliman, I'd say, as far as, like, buffs and protection and abilities and stuff so far. So it'll be interesting to see how she combos in with, like, the Sister Strats and Miracle Dice and how that all plays together. So,
yeah.
It's hard to say see the full picture, but she seems quite good at this rate.
Yeah, if those guys did miss it, she's movement 8, 2 plus weapon skill and ballistic skill, strength 5, T5, wounds 8, as we mentioned earlier, 5 attacks, leadership 9, a 2 up armor with a 4 pinfall, and then she also has a 4 feel no pain against mortal wounds. And then any attack that's allocated to the model, he takes half damage rounding up, which I'm surprised to see that back after what happened to Iron Hands. And then her close combat weapon, of course, has the obligatory sweep attack where you get double the attacks, or a lunging attack where you get some crazy. In her case, it's going to be strength plus 3, AP minus 3, 3 damage, and every 6 she rolls inflicts an additional mortal wound. The Paragon Missile Launcher does pretty much the same thing. Both profiles are 36-inch range. The Horde Killer version is heavy 2d6, strength 4, AP 0, 1 damage. And the Prioris missile same system is a heavy 2, strength 8, AP minus 2, d6 damage. So that was interesting there. And she does have the old-fashioned, she can reroll 1s to hit and to wound for all models within 6 inches of her, which I thought was surprising to see that again.
It's his core.
It's all core, but it's all core rather than just 1, which we've been seeing.
Right.
Sorry, I did misspeak there. So it's interesting. Like you said, it was kind of underwhelming. I was kind of like, okay, you know, a lot of same Sisters models we've seen previously. So I was like, all right. The next day, ha ha ha, there's a plastic Thunderhawk. Yeah, not for 40K. So all their other box games got some preview neat stuff. Did forget, on Black Library Day, they did introduce the plastic Gaunt's Ghosts. So those of you who are familiar with their famous story, you can finally get their miniatures in plastic all over again.
Yay! Yeah, it's cool that they revealed more 40K novels models on the Black Library Day than they did on the first GW. Yeah. Just goes to show that their priorities are straight. And they're all in plastic, which is cool. So I think we're seeing that as a bit of a trend for a lot of the Forge World stuff now. It's almost exclusively plastic. So I'm wondering if, I know GW did a bit of a factory move. So I'm wondering if maybe they've like handed off some of the older machines to Forge World or how that's working. But it seems like their newer models are moving towards plastic, even the smaller kits.
Right.
So, which I think is a good thing. That's a good thing. Yeah.
So,
plastic anyway. Primarchs? 30K? Who knows?
Crazy, crazy thought. So anyway, that's all the fun there. So long story short, Aeronautical and Perilous adds Eldar Flyers, which I thought was rather confusing because the Phoenix Bomber is one of my favorite planes, so it's cool to see it in Aeronautica, but it was removed from the Forge World website, so it's actually not in 40K anymore. So I was a little confused on that.
Yeah, well, we now know that they have a CAD file for a plastic Thunderhawk. And just like they scaled down the Knights for Adeptus Titanicus, I don't see why they can't scale up the Thunderhawk for 40K.
Right.
Just hit zoom like 10 or 20 times and print. Good to go.
Yep. Control plus. It's real easy.
Also very excited for Warhawk, which is the next Siege of Terra book, which was announced. The famous battle between the Khan and Mortarion is featured on the cover. Oh. Mortarion looks absolutely badass. Yes. So Neil Roberts does a lot of the art for the 40K, the Horus Heresy books, and he's probably become one of my favorite artists for GW. So one thing that I do enjoy about the Black Library books is you can tell who did the cover, unlike the Codex art where you never get the artists ever get credited. So
right.
it's cool to see his art kind of on that cover. I think it looks really awesome.
Let's go back and look at that again. I kind of skipped that whole area, but
I've been calling him Chad Tarian because he's like so massive and like chonk. So
all right, so day five, this was the day I really wanted to get you guys feedback on this because I saw it from an interesting light that I guess no one else is seeing it from. So day five was yet another day of Warhammer reveals, and once again no big surprises, but it was nice to see them all fleshed out so we could get a good look at them. So new orcs, we had seen the rider model before, so the rest of the line has pretty much been revealed. Interesting that it's all the new models are in a limited edition, basically half an Indominus box style marketing system. What do you guys think of those?
Ray?
I'll go ahead. You go first.
No, because I have some salt in my blood for this one. So before I ruin the cheeriness of the podcast, I'll let you go.
I don't know. I think it was bad. I didn't think it was bad.
I guess I'll kind of go next. My biggest thing was, okay, if you're an orc player and I just want the new models, I can get them all in one box. I'm right now super skeptical. Am I going to get the box if I was an orc player? Would actually be on shelves.
Yeah, that's really the only thing that makes me hesitant.
So
that's kind of the crux of it for me, which is, as far as I'm concerned, that box is already sold out. And as we saw with the Lumineth, they did a similar thing to the Lumineth box and the Sisters box, I believe, as well, when that came out, where they basically released a limited edition box with a special edition codex. I think for Sisters, it was maybe 2 to 3 months ahead of the codex. It was quite, because I remember the box coming out, I think, in like November. And then I think the book maybe came out closer to the end of January, if I recall correctly. I might have those dates slightly off, but there was a substantial delay. And I remember in both cases, those boxes being sold out almost instantaneously. And then people scalping and eBaying those books because people wanted to play their armies right away, right? So I just think this like habit of basically releasing a limited edition, like if you want to release that in addition to the codex simultaneously, hey, fantastic, right? But the idea that like the only way you can get your rules and some of the models are in this limited edition box, that we, again, guys, we've been watching the pre-order fiasco for the last year. Everything gets sold out instantly. Bellicor was sold out, every army box has been sold out, kits are sold out, like there's literally nothing that they can keep in stock. So you'd think by in a year, since a year ago, they would have like learned that this is not a good way to release stuff. So as far as the releases themselves, they look fantastic. The War Boss looks awesome. The boys look awesome. The squig riding dudes, I'm not in love with, but they look fairly good. And they're nice and clean. But it's just the release pattern, I guess, is where my gripe is, which is people want those rules and they want them right away. And it's like, if you're an orc player, you either have to wait an additional 3 months for your rules, which doesn't feel good. Like then do tournaments allow those rules in between time, right? Should they be allowed at tournaments? Because a lot of players won't be able to get access to those rules, especially because you can't buy digital copies, right? You can only buy the codex. So I just think the distribution model for the books is just awful. And I just really hope GW stops doing it because it's a lot of feel bads for all the have nots. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of salty orc players as a result.
Right. So we did do a nice job of bearing the lead there, by the way. So if you're keeping track at home, your next codex will be AdMech, followed by Sisters of Battle, followed by Orcs. I know I can already hear one of my good friends screaming at us now. When? Don't know. No release dates were given, but it's unclear whether that orc codex will be separate from that limited edition box or not. I'm assuming eventually it will be separate, but it may not, you know, it might be a while. So who knows?
Right.
So, you know,
that's and the other thing that is not great about it is that, I'm sure it'll be a good deal, but it just concerns me that they keep going down this path of like limited releases, for no particular reason.
Yeah. I'm confused on as well. Yeah. The new
especially orc, especially because we're behind, you know?
Yeah, that too. Although the glad you brought up the war boss on in Mega Armor. That's really cool, actually. It's kind of like, huh, that's kind of cool, with the especially with a little Gretchen on his back firing the gun. That was clever. We talked a little bit about the Age of Sigmar orcs, and I was like, that's kind of what I liked about it. The more of a mecha version, you know, not mechas, not that they're not anime, but more of that Mad Max look. So.
Right. Yeah, he's kind of like an orc in mega. Well, he's in mega armor, right? So he's got that mega armor orc look. So I do really like it. I think it's a fantastic model. Probably my favorite model that they revealed so far was that orc. But yeah, hopefully they make lots of copies, and they're some of their by then. You know, I know the UK is opening up closer in the next few weeks a lot more. So I'm hoping that, you know, their production issues start to kind of abate a little bit.
That is the hope. Moving on, there's another strange release in this area that I also want you guys' thoughts on. So if you're an Astra Militarum player, there is a new Cadian upgrade sprue, which I was very confused with. I don't play guard, so I was trying to figure out. So I had to go back to their website and realize, well, what's available now, and what is this really upgrading? And so apparently it was explained to me that the special weapons were like impossible to find. So now you can get all the special weapons in one spot. But it just was kind of weird when I'm thinking about, you know, how many times we complain about some other models that need to be updated. And now all you're getting is just, you get a bunch of arms and heads. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, I mean, I think, so I know the Cadian special weapon like pack was Finecast, I believe. So I think with this upgrade sprue, that basically means that almost the entire Cadian range is available in plastic. I think it's great that they've added a lot more, you know, one of the bigger issues with the older set were the things like the heads. So the actual bodies of the models weren't that bad. So it's nice that they were able to do stuff like this and give a little bit of a refresh to the range. It seems weird to me that they're doing Cadians. I thought their planet blew up and that chaos basically destroyed them all. So it's weird that they're getting a bit of a focus. And I also really like that they've added like a lot more diversity as far as like, you know, they've added different, you can tell that there's like different races of human, or not races, but like ethnicities, I guess. And there's also females as well. I think that's really cool. So I know a lot of people have been clamoring for like more female guard parts. So I think that's really cool as well. I guess where I'm not as stoked about it is it probably means we're not going to get a new Cadian guard kit anytime soon. So hopefully that means we're going to get like a Catachin kit, or like a Death Corps Recruit kit, or a Steel Legion kit, or like a Praetorian kit instead. And we'll at least get one new guard kit. Like maybe they decided, hey, we're not going to redo the Cadians, but we'll redo Catachans or one of the other guard regiments. And that's what we're going to get. And in that case, I'll be happy. But if, you know, I can't see them rescuing the Catachan set with like new heads. Those models are awful.
And new arms.
their scale is just totally absurd. So we'll see what happens. I would love if they did this kind of stuff for all the races, like little world eaters, expansion kits, noise marines, Eldar, like all sorts of like to make your guardians slightly better. Like if it's a small amount of resources invested to do just basic kind of upgrade kits, I think that'd be really cool for them to do across a lot of the different ranges, just to add a lot more like variety to the armies without, because people are getting those bits anyways, they're getting them for 3D printers. So it'd be great if GW could just produce them in plastic, and then we don't have to go to 3D printers.
Yeah, I got you brought that up, because that is something at first I went, oh, that would be so cool. Even to the Noise Marines, Noise Marine sprue is still in Finecast, and it's pretty much mono pose. And but then I went, oh, please don't do that to Guardians. We really need new Guardian models. But that's all we get. When maybe you get a few weapon options, okay. It's better than nothing, I guess. And so it was. It just, I thought it was interesting. It was just a different way to go, and maybe this is a stopgap to at least that small resources, big output to the fans. I have to talk to a guard player and see if they're just excited about this. I was kind of just, I wouldn't say it was taken aback, but I was just kind of like, huh, that's interesting. I was very, and it was also the same point too. Cadians, aren't they dead? Are they still around? Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Abaddon launched a Blackstone Fortress at their planet and like detonated it into their planet. So, yeah, they're not doing so well. I wonder where these guys are coming from.
Right.
And to your point, Eric, like I think the bigger issue is like, if I'm a guard player, am I happy that I'm getting something? Sure. Was this what I was hoping for? Probably not, right?
Okay.
You know, I would love like an Emperor's Children upgrade sprue with like shoulder pads, heads, backpacks, and sonic weapons that would be compatible with like the current Chaos Space Marine kit. I would take that in a heartbeat. But if that means that I'll never get actual Noise Marines, do I still want that? I don't know, right?
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess at the end of the day, like, I hope Guard gets more down the road with their Codex release, and it's not just like they're getting this kind of like paltry upgrade sprue. But I fear that could be the case.
Especially when you see what AOS got for Thirstlanesh. You know, those guys are just screaming to be converted into Noise Marines. They're just so awesome looking. And you're like, yeah, I think that'd be neat to come out with like a dedicated Noise Marine set, you know, rather than just right. a couple shoulder pads and the few random sonic weapons. But if that's all we get, that's better than what we have now. So, all right.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you look at the broader model release schedule for 40K, we had new Space Marines, new Necrons at the start of the edition, right? We had no new Death Guard, except the one character. No new Drakari. No new for any of the other Space Marine supplements. Doesn't look like we're going to get any new Admech, except the one character. There's going to be some new Sisters and new Orcs. But they're, again, not full ranges. So it's just really interesting to see how they're choosing which factions get kind of big model releases. It seems like AOS is getting a lot more new models than we are. Like when I look at the Gravediggers, and not to be like jealous, although I am, they just had Slaanesh release. They had the Gravediggers. There's like lots of silt. There's like other models coming out, like the Lumineth release. Like they've had fairly massive releases back to back to back to back. It seems like every few months there's a fairly big army release. So whereas 40K seems like it's not been a ton.
No, and you hit it right on the head too. Is nothing new for Drakari.
Which is fine. Their range is great, but like maybe new Grotesques would have been cool, or Astrobil Evect, who we've all been clamoring for many years.
Yeah, that would have been nice. New Beast Packs, new Mandrakes. Not that I'm complaining, but oh well. But yeah, it does feel left out.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
Now, on the other hand, the mystery box, which was on Saturday, what will be the big reveal? It was probably the worst kept secret in the hobby.
I was going to say, you did forget the Fire and Magic tease.
Thank you. Oh, let me tell you the story about this, right? So, as the intrepid reporter for the Exterminatus podcast, I was watching this at work. And during COVID, somebody decided prior to me starting the position that all the COVID supplies would be stored in my office because my office is right off the entryway to our community. So I'm trying to watch this, right? Under the cloak and guise of I'm on a conference call. The receptionist does the old, I'm going to knock and enter anyway, because all I need is something. So rather than just walking in and grabbing the masks or whatever she needs, she goes, I'm just grabbing a mask. And right as Fire and Matt, right as that came up. So I'm like, what did they say? I'm trying to figure out how on Twitch to rewind. It's not working. I'm like, what was it? Oh, get out. So anyway, Ray, tell us what's going on with that. Cause I missed it.
Sorry, you want Ray to tell you? Go ahead, Ray.
Well, Ray plays both factions, so I thought it'd be...
Both factions? Oh, I haven't had Grey Knights in a while. Yeah, it looks like
you'll always be a Grey Knight player to me.
Alright. This looks like it's another push in what's going to end up being a narrative book that may or may not have an army of renown in it. In this case, it's Thousand Sons versus Grey Knights.
See, I think it's going to be like a box set, kind of like...
Well, they did say it's going to be... They did say it's going to be a battle box, but I guarantee there's going to be like a book behind it. It's not just going to be that.
Yeah, my prediction is a battle box with existing models, except maybe one new character for each faction, just like Pain and PD. And from the looks of it, we're probably getting a plastic Castellan Crow and like maybe a plastic Thousand Suns sorcerer character, which we definitely don't need because we have a whole box of sorcerers. And yeah,
well,
and no one takes sorcerers anyways.
Here's what I'm expecting for ninth ed Thousand Suns. We're going to see a limit to one exalted sorcerer, kind of like a
Demon Prince or exalted sorcerer, because Demon Prince would make sense, but exalted sorcerer doesn't seem like it makes sense.
Exalted sorcerer, because a lot of their stuff's been going off of the way that it says that their faction goes off of in the fluff, you know, in the narrative part of the codex. And if you look at the Thousand Suns, their little narrative portion where it talks about how their forces are, they're each, I don't remember if they call it a cabal or what they call it, but there is only one cults. The cults. There's only one exalted sorcerer.
So yeah, I mean, that's hard to say.
In the end, it's just until we see something, this is just me making guesses, but I'm expecting to see the current box of exalted sorcerers to be rebranded as sorcerers, and then a single exalted sorcerer clan pack to be released eventually.
Yeah, I mean, the Thousand Suns in general just don't have a lot of kits. I'm just looking at 31 kits, which is the least of all the Chaos factions outside of the Knights.
And especially when you consider that a bunch of those kits are basically just from AOS.
Yeah, or Chaos Space Marines. So, like, as far as their unique kits, I think they only have, like, six. Like, Magnus, Araman, Exalted Sorcerers, the two Scarab Occult squads, and then Zangors, basically.
No, I wouldn't even count Zangors, because that's another. That's just another thing that they borrowed from AOS. They've got five.
Right, but at least for the regular Zangors, they do have the close combat sprue. So it's like there's actually something sculpted for them for 40k, whereas the Zangor Skyfires are just the exact. They're not like 40k eyes, if that's the word. And actually, the funny thing is, if you go to the Thousand Suns page on GW, none of the Zangor stuff is there. Not even the Skyfires. It's just none of it's on that area. Yeah. I have been eyeing. I had a weird vision like last week that I should buy and paint three Mutalith Vortex Beasts for no particular reason. So maybe that's a sign that it's time to do that.
Interesting. I had a vision to paint the models.
Like, yeah, I just had this like feeling that it's a good idea to do for the future. It was like future proof for when they're good. Because you know they'll be good.
So there you go. So that might be a hint of our next view.
Sorry, I was just going to say, I hope we actually get some more actual Thousand Suns models, something to set them to add to them, to set them a little bit further apart from everybody else.
Yeah. I know in the one of the coolest units in 30K, Thousand Suns were basically a unit of, they're basically like Thousand Suns Marines with close combat weapons. They had like the curved swords, and they were like, they use their in the cult, in the lore in 30k, each of the Thousand Suns cults had different abilities. So there's obviously Cult of Time, which able to like manipulate time, there's like mutation, etc. There's like 30k versions, but there's one cult that basically used their psychic powers to enhance their melee abilities, so they were able to basically, you know, fight faster, swing harder. And so they use their psychic abilities to augment their physical fighting, their close combat abilities. So having something like that, where they brought in like a unit of something like that into 40k would be really cool. Or even just allow me to use my psychic terminators from 30k, or psychic dreadnoughts, like the Osirian dreadnoughts, which are really cool models. If I could get rules for those for 40k, I'd be really happy.
We'll keep our eyes on that. So yeah, it kind of gives a hint of the roadmap ahead. We don't have a time frame. But so after orcs, we're looking at possibly Grey Knights, possibly Thousand Suns. There's also a prevailing rumor going around that if it weren't for COVID, we'd be looking at Gene Stealer Cult coming out right around the corner. Instead, it got pushed. Orcs got pushed into their slot as well. So curious to see if we start seeing some stuff for that. That's another ring
for sure.
Definitely need a new book. But interesting to hear, like, you know, if what kind of models they might be getting as well. But curious to see all that coming down the pike. And then, as I mentioned, this is the worst kept secret. third edition Age of Sigmar is coming out. So they had a couple more model reveals and pretty much didn't say anything about the rules. It just was an interesting take on, you know, who... I thought the craziest thing was it's Du Black doing an interview. And I'm like, isn't his job like posted on the Games Workshop website? What's going on?
Well, yeah, sure I think growing the teams. I don't think like he got fired or anything. So, and until they obviously find a replacement, he's probably still in his old role. So,
anyway, you're thinking that was probably recorded a while ago.
Well, at the very least, all the work that was done on this was done a while ago.
Right.
I'm excited for the Stromcast Eternals.
I actually thought that the one was neat. Which one was? I forget the names. The one that looks like the one that looks like his shield is actually just a giant gong. That guy. I actually kind of like that model.
Yeah. I'm really curious if like all of the new Stormcasts are going to be this like slender, sleeker style. Are these like the primary Stormcast, or is it just like new mod? Like, it's not going to be just like, hey, it's not like Tactical Marines where like I think there's been like 13 different sets of Tactical Marines over the years where they're just like, hey, we're just going to release new versions of them. I'm curious if it's going to be like a new unit and then the old ones are still usable, or if it's going to be like exactly just a new model for the existing unit.
Yeah, no, they are. They're new units.
Which, the first or the second?
They're new units. They're not replacing the other ones.
Right.
Although at the same time, they are introducing more varied models so that you can see just by the model, like, this is obviously female. This one's obviously male.
Yeah, that's really cool too. I do like the increase in diversity in the various sculpts. I think that's something that's always been a little bit missing, I guess, but there's already a lot of internet outrage over it, which I think is really sad.
I didn't realize there was that much outrage about it. That's okay.
Maybe just the gatekeepers.
Oh, yes, them again. All right.
Well, my only gripe about Saturday's preview was the fact that they decided that they weren't going to share who the other faction in the box was.
Hmm. Many are speculating it's a brand new army altogether.
Yeah. I've heard that. I've heard some people say that they think it's the Famir.
Mm-hmm. Swamp monsters.
Is that what that preview video was at the end?
With
the guys camping and all the red eyes coming out? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. All the rhyming made me think Nurgle, but at the same time, as people were talking about the Famir, and they're like, oh, this is why. I'm like, okay. I'll just sit back and watch.
What was the... So first AOS was Khorne versus Stormcast. Second edition was Stormcast versus...
Night Haunt.
So this will be Stormcast versus something else. So that's Death and Chaos covered. So it could be a Destruction faction. Because I know Destruction's not had a ton of love.
Well,
and they seem to have the least amount of like factions.
Yeah, and everything that... When it comes to AOS, I have to hand it to them. Everything that they do is involving the narrative. And that includes their starter boxes. So, like, the first starter box, you know, in their narrative, this is how it starts. Their first and biggest enemy of the Stormcast was Khorne. They go through, they're trying to, you know, reclaim the realms from chaos. And then they go through their malign porn tents. Necroquake happens. Big bad guy is Nagash. So we get that second box. We go through. And with the Broken Realm stuff they've been doing, that's continued the narrative. And now they've beaten back Nagash. He's lost his physical form and he's trapped in one of the realms. So enter new bad guy. And one of the first things we're seeing is that guy that they announced on, I think it was Monday, Kragnos, which they say he's basically a god of thunder. So I definitely think we're seeing an opening for like a Destruction kind of a thing coming in.
Anything you guys were hoping to see but didn't?
A roadmap for the next few codexes besides the ones that we'd already predicted last cast, basically. Like something that said, hey, like, because I know in like December or whatever, I think they were like, here, the next four codexes.
Right.
So it would have been nice to have something like that just kind of like gave us a little bit of, I don't know, just like, or just like some sort of plan as far as FAQs, release schedules, anything like that.
Ray, anything you were hoping for?
I wasn't expecting what we did see. And I feel kind of like this might have been one of those instances where like, okay, well, this is the stuff that we were normally going to show, we're not going to get to anywhere near as fast as we wanted. So let's just talk more about the stuff that we kind of already talked about. And that, Yeah, I kind of feel let down. Yeah, I think everybody understands that there's all sorts of things causing issues when it comes to the products getting out in a timely manner like they were hoping. But that doesn't mean you can't at least let people know, hey, yeah, we know things are going a lot slower than we meant them to, but you know, here's a little heads up on what's coming. We just don't know when they're coming. You know,
right.
I think that's Thousand Sun stuff.
Right. The thing I felt best about this whole thing was, okay, none of these are really any big surprises, but I'm also not feel like I'm being teased to death of, here's something cool. It may come out in November, but we're telling you about it now. You know, I'm like, so it just kind of tells me they're pumping the brakes to try and get caught up a little bit. When is that going to be? I don't know, you know, but anyway. But then the craziest thing was today's announcement. In-person Warhammer events are coming back with a bang. Didn't know if you gentlemen saw this. But Warhammer wrote, it was yesterday, sorry. So first of all, going to be two Golden Demon Awards, one in England, one at Adepticon. And then they are doing something similar to what they do in England with heat events. So if you attend a Warhammer event and you qualify, you go to a final, and there's going to be three of those in the United States, one in Orlando, Florida, one in New Orleans, one in Austin. And it was not abundantly clear, are these paired with existing tournaments, or is this a separate Games Workshop event? And what does this mean? So I'm kind of on pins and needles to find out what they have to say.
Well, the one event that's taking place in Los Angeles, they say, is going to be held at their new Warhammer store. So at least in that one case, it's not. And I wouldn't be too surprised if what they call Austin, they really mean Grapevine, which is where the first Warhammer store and cafe is.
See, okay, I was mistaken then. I thought that was in Dallas. So that's...
I haven't looked. I just know that it's in...
I'll research that. You guys talk amongst yourselves.
Yeah, I'm excited for them. I wish they'd give us a little bit more details as far as like the format and stuff like that. And the dates. I don't think they actually gave dates at any point. So it seems all very... cloak and dagger. So I don't know. It feels like I think just with GW in general, it's like they always make announcements but never give you the information you actually want.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like they just like to really drip feed information, and I find it very frustrating sometimes.
Yeah.
Either don't tell me anything or tell me everything, but don't give me this like drip feed.
Yeah. With the one,
I have so many questions now, right? And it's like I'm not gonna be able to find out.
Yeah, with like the one in New Orleans with them having the new, what do they call it? Is it the New Orleans Open that FLG started talking about? Yeah, Frontline.
Yeah.
I could see that being the case there. You know, the two that are in Texas and California, I could see them being GW run. But as far as the one in Orlando goes, I don't know. I mean, I know that Frontline's not... I don't know of one that Frontline does in Florida, but all this talk is also talking about next year. So who's to say that they're not going to announce that, you know, here's an Orlando Open. I mean, we've been seeing a lot of working together when it comes to the tournaments between Frontline Gaming and Games Workshop. So, I mean, is it going to become a little bit more official in that regard, where a lot of their events are held kind of in conjunction with Frontline Gaming stuff, or is this just an instance of, you know, just a happy little coincidence, as someone might put it?
Well, when I went to Games Day Baltimore, you know, many thousand years ago, if you went for the tournament, it was just another Baltimore GT. It was the same guys who ran the tournament throughout. Matter of fact, some of the lower ranking writers for White Dwarf were actually in the tournament. And then Games Workshop did stuff like some of the authors were there to sign autographs. They had one of the sculptors from Forge World. And I think they did their usual reveal thing like they did at, but we've already seen it, like LVL. So I think it's a matter of, if Games Workshop is doing a roadshow, I think they're going to use an existing structure, and this is going to add some stuff to it beyond, we're just going to show off some new models that are going to be released sometime in the future. So that's kind of what I picture this to be. And I think the nice thing is it culminates to a grand location
GW property. So interesting to see there. And by the way, yes, the other Jeans Workshop store is in the Grapevine is actually right outside Dallas Fort Worth Airport.
Okay.
So they're right next to the airport. So I don't know what that Austin event is. So I know Frontline Gaming does have an event in Austin. That's the Lone Star Open. And that is, oh crap. Is that the July 31st one? I have to check my dates on those. Yeah, because the team tournament's the 25th and 26th of September. Yeah, that's July 30th, 31st to August 1st. So maybe that's what it is. So we'll keep our eyes open for that. It's exciting to see them involved in the tournament circuit again. And but I think, like Jim, I'm a planner, I need some details. What's going on?
Yeah, like I don't know what benefit they have, like holding it, like okay, if you don't want to give us the format, fine, but the dates at least is like the most basic piece of information.
Yeah, I mean, even
I guess just give us that info. You guys already have a venue, so it's not like it's in flux. It sounds like you guys have already booked the place.
Yeah, it's weird.
So just tell us the dates. We'll put them on my calendar. I'll make sure not to book other events to go travel that week if I want to, you know,
right,
save the date, right?
Yeah, so I even got like a save the date yesterday for my friend's wedding. Like, yeah. Okay, I got more information from that than I got from this, so I don't know.
Hey listeners, this is Raymond with the Extreme Honest Podcast here to talk to you about KR cases. If you're like me and you're constantly looking for that better way to store your armies, then look no further than KR cases. That's right, this is the foam company known for their soft blue foam in the cardboard cases. They're a great way to mix and match whenever you're heading out for that next tournament. You can just swap out those boxes and no need to worry about switching the foam in and out. They're sturdy. The boxes help protect your models. And when you order, they come fast, the order is right, and for a better price than the other guy. So go to krcases.com, and when you place your order, be sure to mention the Extreme Honest Podcast.
Anyway, those are tournaments in the future. Let's talk about tournaments in the past. We had two GTs this past weekend, and some bigger names did make appearances. Ray, do you happen to have those tournaments handy?
Yeah, I got the Mir Yeto one up right now. And
so what's our top five look like there?
All right, in fifth place, we had Jordan Stein playing Necrons. Fourth place, Ben Nichols playing Cult of the Cursed Blade. Is that Drakari?
Cult of the Cursed Blade? Yes, it is. Blade?
Okay. Third place, Junior Aflehi playing Blood Angels. Second, Eric Trock playing Drakari. And in first, Kyle Perry playing Eldari.
How much Drakari was in his Eldari list? I'm curious.
Actually, none. He did a large grouping of Harlequins, followed by Craftworld for heavy support. A bunch of Shadow Weavers and a bunch of Death Spinners. It's a bunch of Warp Spiders.
Cool. Good for him.
Yep. A little nifty little list there. And not a single Drakari there. Eric Trock's list. That was all Drakari. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 Raiders, all with Phantasm Grenade Launchers. So, and then Junior Flahey with Blood Angels. He was looking at large block of Sanguinary Guard with an Eradicator Squad. So it looked like he's starting to tech out for killing Raiders. I should take that back. He had three massive units of Sanguinary Guard.
They're scary.
Yeah, I don't like them. Not one bit. Not that I don't like them like they're a bad choice. Like, I don't want to face them. And then the Cult of the Cursed Blade one looks like a lot of Mandrakes, something doesn't add up here, guys. Is this the Cult of the Cursed Blade, but then he has also got a Blackguard Patrol in here as well. So two patrols of Cult and lots of Hellions. That's what I think he was going for there. Okay, lots of Hellions, lots of Witches, and then a battery of Ravagers from Blackheart. And then real fast, the Necrons. Nice to see them finally make the top five. Wow, I haven't seen one of these in a while. Catacomb Command Barge, along with a Locust Lord and a Technomancer. Three smaller blocks of five Immortals, a bunch of Flayed Ones, bunch of Lich Guard, 15 Lich Guard to be exact, and then a bunch of Destroyers and three Doomsday Arcs. It's like a retro list. It's kind of cool. Yep. Some crazy stuff going on there. So other notables at the event, Frankie G and Papa going 2-2 on the day, finishing 21st. And your golden spoon, Gene Steeler cult player, Ryan Averill, going a perfect 0-5. It's got a really cool team name, though. Xenos Petting Zoo. I think that's a really cool team name. Ray, what was the other GT from this past weekend?
The Red River GT.
That was in Ohio, I believe. Never. So what's our top five look like there?
And fifth place was Justin Curtis playing Chaos. Fourth, DJ Timms playing Necrons. Third, Daniel Sansone playing Chaos. Second, Brad Chester playing Drukhari. And in first, Thomas Ogden playing Dark Angels.
Holy cow, Dark Angels won the event. I was checking in on this during the weekend. I never saw the final results. Brad Chester was leading going into round five, so I was curious to see that. Talon Master, Chaplain on bike, Ravenwing Apothecary, three units of three attack bikes, and then a regular bike squad, followed by two Ravenwing Land Speeder Vengeance. Nice. And then a large block of, these look like three units of three Deathwing Command squads with Ezekiel and Azrael. Interesting list. Jim, have you seen Daniel Sansone's list for Chaos?
I have not.
All right. Let's take a quick look at that. Starts out with Chaos Demons, Undivided, Great Unclean One, and a Lord of Change. Three units of three Nurglings, and then a unit of 10 Plague Bearers, followed by a unit of 20 Plague Bearers. Supreme Command Detachment featuring who else but Mortarion. And then he brings in a Super Hairy Auxiliary Detachment featuring Magnus the Red.
Tasty.
And Justin Curtis was your other Chaos player coming in the top five. He had a very different approach. He starts with Death Guard, the Bite Logos Purifier, followed Blight Spawn, Death Guard, Chaos Lord, 15 Poxwalkers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It looks like 10 Blight Lord Terminators, all with Bale Swords and Combi Bolters. And then he adds a 1,000 Suns Patrol featuring Ahriman, Rubric Marines. Wow, five of them. Two units of five, actually. And then, wow, I haven't seen one of these in forever. A Chaos Fire Raptor gunship. And then he rounds it off with Mortarion. I'll have to go grab my Forge World book. Oh, I thought that thing got pointed out of existence. So there you go. That is your top events from the weekend. Other events, if you were planning on going to the Las Vegas team tournament, you're out of luck. They just announced they are sold out. So interesting to see that.
I'm registered. I'm going. I'm attempting to go. I don't quite have a team yet. I have tickets for a team, and I have one player. and my player that I'm on the team with is responsible for making the rest of the team, so I'm leaving it to them.
Excellent.
I got my first vaccine on Friday, which was great. So hopefully
that is good news. Good for you.
Hopefully by the time everything happens or starts to happen, I'll be fully vaccinated and I can come to your country and invade it with my Canadianness.
I appreciate that. Looking forward to it. I was about to say, is he willing to cross the border there? So,
yeah, I mean, I had no symptoms at all. I went, in fact, I went heavily drinking the same night. So
that helps.
Obviously, my body is fine. And I went heavily drinking the following day. So I was a little tired yesterday, though. I slept quite a bit. But other than that, I've had no symptoms. So I'm coming for you guys.
Looking forward to it. Good to see you back on the tour. Glad to see a lot of these tournaments starting to open up a little bit. My first glance was maybe too soon. I have to admit, a close friend of mine came down with COVID last weekend from air travel. So I'm like, oh, maybe it's too soon. But apparently she had not completed her vaccine. So I'm like, maybe that's something to do with it. But I'm excited to get things started. So, interesting enough, I was about to rattle off the top 10, in the ITC. They are changed from last week's episode, but for some odd reason, the Dallas event from 2 weeks ago is still not in the results. So, take these results with a grain of salt. So, the top 10 looks something like this. In 10th place, Bam Bam Hunter at 772 points. He's completed 5 of 6 events. 9th place, Stephen Trimble. 8th place, Jeremiah Pettit. 7th place, Charlie Andre. 6th place, Goonhammer's James Keeling. 5th place, Kyle Perry. That was the Eldari Harlequin player we talked about earlier today. Fourth place, Mark Escht. Third place, Ben Cherwin. Second place, Ryan Snyder. And in first place with 887 points is Jason McKenzie, who's also played 6 of 6 events so far. Obviously, if any other changes to those standings, we will keep you updated. Jim, any more feedback on our discussion about LO ratings, ELO ratings, or did we ever find out the correct pronunciation of what we're supposed to call
it? I didn't find out the correct pronunciation, but ultimately, because we are a language with many people speaking it, you can pronounce it however the hell you want. And the guy is Polish anyways or whatever, so who knows how to pronounce it unless you're from Poland, so, or Austria or wherever the guy's from. No, just a lot of good feedback, I think. The community was very split on it. It seemed like some people thought it was the devil's work, and some people were like, why haven't we done this already? So always good to have discussions about some controversial topics. And I had a very good conversation this morning with Rob Symes, the Honest Wargamer, about the ethics of sponsorships. We recorded it this morning because he's in the UK and he couldn't make the time. So it'll go live at the normal 6 p.m. time tomorrow, but excited to get that one live. But yeah, we basically just said everyone sucks for an hour. So I'm kidding. But yeah, so just make sure to check that out. But yeah, it was a really good episode with you, Eric. And I think, I've been enjoying the conversations. I'm trying to basically be the Joe Rogan of podcasts, where I have like very long form conversations about like topics with people and then, you know, talk about doing a bunch of psychedelics on top of it. So we'll see what happens.
I had a fun time. That was for sure. It was weird being on the other side of the fence where I was the guest. And but it was also good to stay focused on one topic. I'm always like looking at the clock, make sure we're on schedule for our show here. So that was kind of cool. And I have to say, you know, there were some interesting feedbacks and took some of it to heart. You know, it's like, that's a good point. And so I will attempt to maintain my rankings that we talked about. So hopefully later in the week, I will post those on to Facebook page. So based on this weekend's events, I will try to keep up with the ELO ratings for the top 40K players and may have to go back and add some new players that have made a splash of late.
Yeah, I did actually talk to Sean Naden earlier this week, I think. He had mentioned that they're actually planning to roll out a ELO-style app or site. I'm not sure if it's an app or a site. I can't quite remember, within their local tournament region to start tracking that stuff. So I think in their kind of like Northeast tournament circuit,
yep,
they want to do something like that. So that'll be interesting to see. And I think maybe the first step for people that are interested in getting a system like this rolled out is actually rolling out on a smaller scale, just to kind of test the systems, make sure everything works. And then, you know, at that point, you could probably just because the data is all open and openly available, there's no reason that if someone really wanted, they couldn't just, even if people didn't want to be in the rating system, put people in the rating system and have like run it kind of in tandem with ITC. And I bet you if someone actually did that, so anyone that's listening, and posted the link and kept it regularly updated, I bet you people would be very interested in that and would love to see that. So hint, hint, whoever's got that ability and know-how and motivation, I would definitely. And then, you know, never know, in a year, people will be only thinking about that. Just like 40K Stats Center, right? Like their 40kstats.com, where Peter maintains, you know, that's something that he maintains himself, and he keeps a lot of the tournament, and people use that as a huge resource, right? So, and I know Down Under Pairings also does some sort of additional stats keeping for the game. So, you know, I don't think it's that. I don't think it's that far-fetched, to be honest, to get something like this up and running pretty quickly once the underlying tech is ready to go.
Absolutely. Yeah. Doing it by hand on a spreadsheet right now, it's very time-consuming, so we'll see how long I can keep up.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's a way to, like, you know, even if you could have access to, say, the BCP data, if there's a way you could export the, like, the games and some sort of data, some sort of, some sort of Excel output that you just import into the app, where you just basically export it and then import the data, and it'll basically go through every game, every round, and then, you know, kind of work it out. That would be probably not that hard.
No,
but that's obviously a lot of work. So whoever's smarter than me, get it done.
Yeah, there's definitely people better at this than I am. So Jim, where else can we find you this coming week?
Yeah, I Duplicity Paint Studio on YouTube. Thursday, best overall show, next episode. And then I'm just going to be doing some... I'm actually going to be on Canhammer tomorrow night, or on Wednesday night, talking about Custodes Tactics with Darren, who's like the host there. So, and then I'll just be doing regular streams Friday and Sunday. I'm working on some painting videos, which is exciting. A Sister Battle and a Death Guard model.
Ooh.
But I'm also going to be starting a 6-part series on painting 6,000 points of Dark Angels in one attempt. So stay tuned for that.
Oh my goodness.
That sounds insane. It's because it is. It's not gonna be in one day, but like it's gonna be like a series of videos basically, where I'm gonna catalog it. So I'm excited to get that done, but I'm very intimidated by it because I'm still learning a lot of my YouTube abilities, and it's just a lot of work and planning and stuff. So,
Ray, what are you up to this week?
I'll try to get some hobbying done. Still trying to work on getting an army fully painted.
Sounds like a plan. I'm in the midst of the world tour that is end of school for my kids. So it seems like every night there is a project. So hope to get back to my league in the meantime. Doing some stuff behind the scenes. I'm not quite there to make it out, so I was hoping to make that announcement today. But hang on to your seats. Probably the next one or two episodes, we'll have some announcements of some of your favorite events related to the podcast. So you get to actually at least meet Ray and I in person. Hopefully we can get Jim to invade that part of the States when those events come around.
I will invade the U.S. anytime.
Anytime. Okay. We appreciate that.
Anytime I'm allowed.
So that is the game plan for this week. Of course, additional updates on our Facebook page. You can check those out. Also, check out our Instagram, Exterminatus Podcast. I've been doing that a lot, which is, for somebody my dreadful age, is pretty amazing. So I guess we actually have an Instagram account. So with that, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And I'm Jim.
And thank you for listening to the Exterminatus Podcast.